So, good evening all, and tonight's topic, as advertised, is on the question of the validity of reform marriages. And this is certainly a very contemporary issue. Reform has been around for quite a while now, and I'm not actually sure why the validity of their marriages wasn't discussed, as far as I'm aware, 100 or 150 years ago. But certainly in the past 50 years, it has been widely discussed as being a very practical issue. And the primary reason why it's a practical issue is because a number of people get married under reform or non-orthodox auspices, and then the marriage is terminated, the couple get divorced, and the parties want to remarry. And particularly as far as the woman is concerned, we want to know what is the halakhic status of her first marriage, because if she hasn't had a get, if she hasn't had a halakhic divorce, so then there are going to be serious problems if she is still married. The reform generally don't require gittin. And even if they do have a reform get bears no relation, really, relationship to an orthodox get, a halakhic get. So therefore, there can be very serious problems, because if her first marriage is valid and hasn't been dissolved, so then she's not able to remarry. And if she does so, then the marriage is non-existent. And more problematically even, is the offspring of such a marriage are mamzerim, are halakhically illegitimate. And that, of course, is a very big halakhic disability. So what we need to understand is what the status is of reform or non-orthodox marriages. And the principles are very clear. The principles go back a very long way. But what we have to do is really understand how to apply those principles in practice. So I want to start off with a Mishnah towards the end of Masechet Gittin. Mishnah in Gittin, which says as follows: Hamagarish et ishto v'lana imo befundaki. So a person who gets divorced from his wife, he divorces his wife, v'lana imo befundaki, and they spend the night in the same hostel. Beit Shammai Omrim. And we're not talking about just one's on the fifth floor and one's on the tenth floor, but presumably they're sharing the same apartment, the same flat, the same room. Beit Shammai Omrim, Einat Shricha Hemenu Get Sheni. Beit Shammai says we don't necessitate a second get. Beit Hillel Omrim, Shricha Hemenu Get Sheni. And Beit Hillel says that you do need a second get. So what we're suggesting here, or what we're seeing, is there's a machloket between Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel about whether or not, after this marriage has been dissolved, whether or not by sharing quarters together, the couple have either undissolved the dissolution, or in actual fact what we're going to see is that they've reversed the dissolution, meaning they've got remarried in some halakhic sense. And Beit Hillel says Shricha Hemenu Get Sheni, a second get is required. They've remarried each other. Now, how did they remarry each other? So, if we look in the Gemara, the Gemara says as follows: Al Manechleku. So, what exactly is the argument about? Al Sheraru Hashinivala. So, the suggestion is that there were witnesses to the fact that intercourse took place. They'd got divorced, but they found themselves in the same room in the inn, and they'd been intimate with each other. Beit Shammai omrim adam oseh be'ilat or be'ilat znut. Beit Shammai say that sometimes a person will have what we'll call here a casual relationship with a person, or a promiscuous relationship. Beit Hillel omrim ein adam oseh be'ilat or be'ilat znut. Beit Hillel say, no, a person that never wants to have a promiscuous relationship will always assume that the relationship is actually a marital relationship. If a couple are being intimate, unless we've got clear circumstances that indicate that this relationship, this sexual, physical relationship, intimate relationship, is actually znut, is a promiscuous relationship, then we'll assume that a person would prefer their relationship is not promiscuous and it falls into some halachic category. And a person, we know from the Mishnah at the beginning, Masechet Kiddushin, that a person can effect kiddushin in three different ways. The kesef bishtar of a bia. One is with kesef by giving money or something of monetary value. One is by giving a shtar, and the other is Pavia, through sexual intimacy. So therefore, a person has got an opportunity there to, he's being sexually intimate with this woman, will assume that in actual fact he prefers it to be a legitimate relationship rather than a non-legitimate relationship. Of course, the first mission condition is Aisha Niknate, not Aisha Mekadesh. That's the next paragraph. It's the same point. Aisha Niknate, Bishorosh Durachim, that a woman can be acquired in three different ways. So therefore, we'll assume they're being intimate, and they're not going to treat it as a casual relationship, and therefore he's being Mekadesha. And then the Gemara goes on to say, as well, it might actually be that there were no witnesses to this fact. So Beit Hillel says, no, Beit Hillel, the Gemara says, Beit Hillel Savre Amrinan, Hein Hein Eide Yichud, Vahein Hein Eide Bia. We don't actually need witnesses to see the exact act of intimacy. But if you've got witnesses that see the couple going into Yichud together, going into a secluded place, and stay there for a particular period of time, and we can assume there are grounds to assume that they've been intimate, then we accept that as testimony about their intimacy. And therefore, what we've got, and this is very important, what we've got is a model here in the Gemara in Masechet Gittin, which is showing us that sometimes you can have a case where a person contracts a marriage not through the normal mechanisms of having a chuppah and a rabbi and all sorts of things like that, but that a person can have contract a marriage in a slightly less formal context, but in actual fact they are married. So that is, if a couple have intercourse together, we assume, according to Beit Hillel, that a person doesn't want it to be a promiscuous relationship, but he wants it to be a formal relationship. And even if they are contracting the marriage through the mechanism of bia, of physical sexual intimacy, but we don't actually have to be witness to that. We just need to be witness to something which suggests that. Now, this is a big, this is very, very important discussion in the context of civil marriage, for example. Or not even necessarily civil marriage, but cohabiting couples. Let's say you've got a couple that is cohabiting. And they've been cohabiting for a significant period of time. Halachically speaking, are they married? Now, from this Mishnah and Gemara, it would seem that they might well be married, because Chazaka in Adam Oseh Bilat or Bilat Znut, we assume that a person wants to have a formal relationship, and therefore we're going to categorize this as being a marriage rather than a promiscuous relationship. So that is a starting point. And that, on the face of it, would apply not just to a cohabiting relationship, but would apply also to a couple that's got married through a civil marriage, and would also apply, presumably, to a couple who's got married under non-orthodox auspices, that even if we say that the The ceremony wasn't a valid halachic ceremony. Nevertheless, it might well be that the living together, the being domiciled together, the cohabitation that follows on, that might count as a valid halachic marriage. So that's the question that we've got to ponder. So let's look at how the Shulchan Aruch paskens. Let's look at the Shulchan Aruch in Eben HaEzer, which deals with the laws of marriage. Siman Kuf Mem Tet Se'if Hei. So Lo Amru Chazaka Zudein Adam Oseh Bilat Znut. This Chazaka, this assumption that a person wants a relationship that he's in to be regarded as a formal relationship. Ela Be'ishto She'girsha Or B'Mekadesh Al Tnai Valstam. We don't say it in all cases, but we say it applies to, for example, a person who was married to a woman and divorced her and is then cohabiting with her again. Or a person who marries a woman under certain circumstances, conditions which haven't yet been fulfilled. Sha'arei ishtohi v'ishtohu shechezkato she'ino oseh be'ilat znut ad she'ifarish shehi be'ilat znut. And where you've got a proper relationship, let us say, with the woman in question, then we say that we assume that it's not promiscuous unless we're told otherwise. Avar shar kol anashim b'chazaka shebal l'shem znut. But any other case where we've got the couple are living together or being intimate together, let us say, then we assume that it's a promiscuous relationship, unless we know otherwise. Now, we've really got here two sort of different ends of the spectrum. At one end of the spectrum, we've got a case where a couple have been married, and they got divorced, and now they're being intimate again. So the Shulchan Aruch is telling us there we assume that seeing as they've been intimate at the past and lived together in the past, the nature of their relationship is such that they're going to formalise their relationship. If they get together again, it's going to be on a formal footing. At the other end of the spectrum, you have a couple who just link up in a very casual way, have a one-night stand, and never see each other again. There, it's the whole experience reeks of znut, of promiscuity. This is a casual, one-off relationship. It's not even a relationship, really. It's just an act of intimacy. And in that case, we won't assume that there was any intention of the relationship being formal, and were regarded as znut, and they're not married. There is, of course, a middle ground. The middle ground is that it's not a person that the man's been married to previously, but it's a long-term relationship that is being embarked on. So that, at this point, would be a question, and we might wonder, is that going to have the status of marriage? Because it's not a casual relationship. It's not a promiscuous relationship. So maybe their intention is that it should be a situation of marriage. So let's look at the next seif in the Shulchan Aruch. The next seif in Shulchan Aruch says, "Chein ish v'isha shehemiru ba'anas ha'gzeirot." So this is of some historical interest. A couple who converted, apostatized, they became non-Jewish, but anas hagzeirot, under pressure from persecution. V'nasu zel azeh b'chukot hakutim. And they got married to each other in church, or wherever it was, under non-Jewish auspices. They were Jewish, but they converted out, and they got married under non-Jewish auspices. Afa bishemit yachadim zeim ze b'chol yom leinei hakol. Even though they live together and everybody knows that they're living together, ein choshishin lahem mishum kiddushin. So we don't regard it as being kiddushin. We don't regard them as being married. So this would seem to indicate that even if it's a long-term formal relationship, you know, this has been, formalized, solemnized in church. Nevertheless, it's not regarded as kiddushin. Now, why would such a marriage not be regarded as kiddushin if the couple have been living together long term? So look in the Beit Yosef. The Beit Yosef is quoting from the Rivash. The Rivash, a late Rishon. And the Beit Yosef says, "Da'afilu l'da'atotam ha'go'onim she'sovrim divistam amrim mandel shen kiddushin baal." It's true that some Gaonim, some of the Gaonim were of the opinion that our default position is to assume that if a couple are intimate, that in actual fact their intention is for Kiddushin, i.e. for it to be a formal relationship rather than a casual or promiscuous relationship. And that would indicate that certainly in a long-term relationship, unless we've got evidence to the contrary, they're married. Benidon ze lo baal shen kiddushin. In this instance, where they got married under Christian auspices, then we certainly would say lo baal shen kiddushin. There was no intention there of kiddushin, no intention of being married. Kevan shehitchila benisuin kechukot ha'akum, seeing as the marriage took place in a non-Jewish context, Hare hu ke'ilu perishu she'en da'atam l'shem kiddushin k'dat Moshe v'Yehudit. Then it's as if they stated clearly, we've chosen non-Jewish model of marriage rather than a Jewish model of marriage. So they've got no intention of it being a Jewish marriage. So what the Beit Yosef has suggested is that, according to some Gaonim, it could be that a couple who are living together in a stable relationship for a long period of time, that might be regarded, that case we might say, Ein Adam Oseh Be'ilat or Be'ilat Znut, that the relationship won't be a casual promiscuous relationship. But in the case where they actually got married in a way which is at odds with Kedat Moshe v'Yisrael, which is very clearly not a Jewish model of getting married, so then that indicates that we can't say that a person was Baal L'Shem Kiddushin. It might not be what we would classically call a casual or a promiscuous relationship. But it's certainly not Kiddushin. It's certainly not Kiddushin either. And I suppose to some degree what the Rivash has introduced here is a notion of, we started off with this sort of a binary choice. It's either L'Shem Znut, or if it's not L'Shem Znut, then it's L'Shem Kiddushin, meaning it's either promiscuous or it's halachic marriage. And possibly there's something which is in the middle. It's not actually promiscuous or casual, but because it's been done in a non-halachic way, so then it doesn't become halachic marriage either. So that's something that we have to get our heads around, and that's addressed somewhat by the Rama. If we look at the Rama in Eben Ha'ezer Simon Lamed Gimel Seif Aleph, he says, Yeshomrim de Panui Ha'bala Pnuya Lifnei Eidim. If you've got a couple who are intimate with each other, and they're Eidim to the fact, not actually of their intimacy, but they went off together and closed the door behind them, Choshishin Shema Kivein L'Shem Kiddushin, then there are some who think that we should be worried about Kiddushin, that this is a marriage, because Chazakein Adam Oseh Be'ilat or Be'ilat Znut. We've got an assumption that a person doesn't want to have a casual relation or promiscuous relationship. The Chazakein Adam Oseh Be'ilat or Be'ilat Znut. Avalim Gvar Hukzak Liznut or Sheish Lo Isha Acheret Lo Chashinan. However, if we can assume that this is a person who's engaged in znut and is a promiscuous person, or she'ish lo isha acheret, or we know that he's got a wife and she's not going to agree to him having two wives, lo chashinan, then we don't regard it as being marriage. V'yesh makilim b'chol inyan, and there are those who are makel, who are lenient under all circumstances, and say that even, you know, if it's panui habal hapnuya, a couple of singles who go off together, that also doesn't contract a marriage, and that's just a casual relationship. Now, the big question is, really, as I've said, is whether or not you can apply this principle, or whether or not we need to apply this principle. That's perhaps a better way of saying it. Whether or not we need to apply the principle of Ein Adam Oseh Be'ilato Be'ilat Znut, that a person doesn't enter into a promiscuous relationship, whether we can apply that to couples who are cohabiting, couples who are civilly married, couples who are married under reform or non-orthodox auspices. That's really the question that we have to ask ourselves, and that's what we have to look into. So, I want to share with you a couple of teshuvot on the subject, which will give us an understanding of how the poskim deal with this. So, the most prominent of the poskim to address it is Rav Moshe Feinstein in Sheilot Tshuvot Igrot Moshe. He's asking exactly this question, that, you know, if you've got situations where we've got a question, really, what's going on here? If we look in the, you know, what will the rule be? If you look about four lines down in the first tshuva I've got here from Rav Moshe Feinstein, Evan Ha'ezer, Chelek Aleph Simon Ayin Dalad. So he's talking about a woman who came from an Eastern Bloc country who claims that she got married under communist auspices and never had chuppah v'kiddushin, and now she's ended up in Canada, and she wants to know, is she allowed, or it's actually, I think it was her children, she got remarried in Canada, and then had children, and her children are nice from children, and the question is, are they mamzerim or not? What was the status of the first marriage? So he brings down a discussion of, if we look down in the fourth line, he brings a case from the Rashba, who says, Katavanisat Shimon Bechezkat Penuya. A woman gets married to Shimon, and Shimon believes that she's a single woman. But Nodashi he Eshit Ruvain. And then it becomes apparent that she's actually married to Ruvain. But Ruvain's abroad or something, and she got married to Shimon. Ruvain came back, Vigirsha Ruvain, Achashin Isait Shimon. And then Ruvain discovered what had happened and divorced her right away. But she's, in the meantime, she's married to Shimon. Now we want to know what the status is of that marriage to Shimon. V'dar Shimon ima achar girushei Ruvain. Now, Shimon, obviously the marriage was not a valid marriage because she was married to somebody else. But then after Ruvain had divorced her, Shimon remained living with her. He never halachically married her because it was an invalid marriage, but he remained living with her. Now, Shimon knows that she'd been married to Ruvain. By this stage, he knows that she'd been married to Ruvain. V'ra'aha get b'yad ha'isha she'girsha Ruvain. And he knows now that she's divorced from Ruvain. Nodahu she'en kiddushin tofsim ve'eshet ish. Now, he knows he can't, that his first marriage was not valid. V'gamaru ba'alacha ge'rushin harishon she'en kiddushin. Now, he's remaining intimate with her after she got divorced, even though he shouldn't really get married to her, because he's not allowed to marry a woman with whom he's had an adulterous relationship. Nevertheless, he continued living with her. Hare sover to af b'mufka la'avor iso sota le'boel, amina chazaka she'lo yivol la'avor b'iso nida dipnuya, iso znut dipnuya. That we can assume that the person, even though he knows that he shouldn't really be marrying this woman, he nevertheless, he's not going to transgress and live with her out of wedlock, And therefore, he's going to make up his mind. He's going to carry on living with her with the intention of being married to her. So the Rashba is basically saying that we've got a case where the person has shown that he's not a fully observant Jew. He's not supposed to be married to this woman. It's a valid marriage if he does marry her, but he's not supposed to marry her. Right? So he's not supposed to marry this woman, but he disregards that, and he does marry her. Right? Then we've got the question, is that common law marriage, is it valid? And the Rashba says it is, because just because he's not particular in one area of halakha, doesn't mean to say he's not going to be particular in the other area of halakha. However, Rav Moshe then quotes the Radbaz, who says differently, because seeing as this woman never went to the mikveh, so this is a prohibited relationship in any event. And if he's having a prohibited relationship with her in any event, he's not going to be worried about the halachic niceties of chuppah v'kiddushin. So fine, you know, it's an issur karet for him to be intimate with her. That's a very serious matter. He's not going to worry about something which is far less serious, which is the question of whether they're in wedlock or not in wedlock. So this is a machloket between the Rashba and the Radbaz, and Rav Moshe Feinstein comes down in support of the opinion of the Radbaz, because he says this is basically what the Rivash says as well, and the Vilna Gaon also, that if a person is non-religious, so then we won't apply the principle of Ein Adam Oseh Be'ilat or Be'ilat Znut. If a person is not observant, we won't assume that they necessarily want their relationship to be a formal halachic relationship. And therefore, Rav Moshe was very much of the opinion that we can say that a couple that's non-observant, who are just living together, either cohabiting or they've got married civilly, that there's nothing to suggest that this is a marriage kedat Moshe v'Yisrael, and if they separate, there's no halakhic imperative for them to have a get, and therefore any children that are born subsequently to the woman when she's in another relationship are not mamzerim. Because basically what Rav Moshe is saying is that the principle of Ein Adam Oseh Be'ilato Be'ilat Znut, that a person doesn't want their relationship to be promiscuous, halachically promiscuous, only applies to people who feel bound by the halachic system. If they don't feel bound by the halachic system, so then they're not going to have that in mind. Now, one could debate it and, you know, ask whether realities are, you know, are like that nowadays or not. I would certainly say I don't know what the realities were like 50, 60 years ago when that tshuva was written. I think that tshuva was from the late 1950s, 1957, I think, something like that. But certainly I would say nowadays that, you know, it's people don't feel the need to be halachically married. You know, and people, you know, do feel that it's you know, acceptable to be in a casual relationship, and perhaps that has some bearing on this discussion as well. So that's the first tshuva of Rav Moshe Feinstein, which is relevant. He then goes on to discuss reform marriage ceremonies. Now, reform marriage ceremonies will be different to a common law arrangement, just cohabiting. Because in a reform ceremony, there has been an act of kiddushin. The husband has given the wife, or the bride has given the groom, so the groom has given the bride a ring and said, Harayat Mukudeshet. So is that there's certainly been something which suggests that the couple want to have a Jewish married relationship. Is this going to be a valid halachic marriage? So Rav Moshe says, Hanachon la'aniut dati, It seems to me, Shein HaKiddushin Shayu Etzel Reform Rabbi Klum. Reform Kiddushin are not valid at all. Im Nitbarer Heitev Shelo HaYusham Edim Kesherim. If you can be ascertained that there weren't kosher Edim there, Shera'u Netinat Tabat, who saw him giving the ring, Va'amirato Harayat Mekudesh Etli, and heard him say, at the same time, Harayat Mekudesh Etli, you are betrothed to me with this ring. So here Rav Moshe is disqualifying the marriage on a technicality. He's saying that possibly it could be a valid marriage. In terms of all you need for something to be a valid act of marriage is for the husband to give the wife a ring and to make a declaration, or actually to make the declaration and then give the ring, and for it to be witnessed by two kosher edim. So if there aren't two kosher edim, so then it's not a valid marriage. If there are two kosher edim, then we would have a problem. Now, if there aren't two kosher edim, you might say, well, hold on, but later, you know, then they're going to live together as husband and wife. So that would indicate that, you know, maybe that's ein adam oseh bilat or bilat znut. This is an ongoing marriage. So the answer to that would be that, no, we can say exactly what we said previously, that because they're not an observant couple, we don't assume that they want this to be a halachic marriage, and that we can assume that it's what we would call bilat znut. Now, somebody's raised in the chat, they've raised a question about another point that Rav Moshe makes, and they says, is there not also an issue that in some reform marriages, both the husband and the wife give each other a ring and say, you are mekudash to me? So that's the other point that Rav Moshe makes, is that in many reform weddings, and I don't know what the exact practice is, but I suspect it's probably in all reform weddings nowadays, that there's an exchange of rings. The husband gives the wife a ring, and the wife gives the husband a ring, and each one makes the declaration. And he says that if they're doing that, so then that certainly will invalidate the wedding, because it's invalidating the kinyan in terms of how does Jewish marriage work through kesef. The husband gives the wife a ring or money, and therefore she becomes mekudeshet to him. Whereas if you have a double ring ceremony, certainly in the way that the reform will do it, is there will be an assumption that, no, the way we get married is by me giving you a ring and you giving me a ring. They both have to give a ring, and therefore it's not the underpinning assumptions are not there. They are being undermined by the fact that they each give each other something, so there's no notion of kinyan for either of them. It's just a swap of articles, and therefore he says it would also be invalid. So Rav Moshe Feinstein in practice wasn't worried about either civil marriage or non-orthodox marriage having halachic validity. He said that he preferred it would be better where possible to err on the side of caution and to have a get. But if for whatever reason a get can't be obtained, so then there's no question of, not only is there no question of mamzerut, but also that the woman can remarry. And of course this is a very bold teshuva, and very bold position to take, and somebody with small shoulders, narrow shoulders, wouldn't be able to take such a position, because, you know, you're really, you know, allowing somebody who could have been thought of as being an Eshet Ish to remarry is a very serious matter. And as Poskim say, Kvar HaRazakein, Rav Moshe has paskened, and that is very widely respected psak. However, it should be noted that certainly at the time, this was a point of great contention, and not everybody agreed with him. Most prominently, Rav Yosef Eliyahu Henkin, the current Rav Henkin's grandfather, a contemporary of Rav Moshe Feinstein in America, also came from Europe and came to America, I think, a little bit before Rav Moshe Feinstein. He was regarded, he died well before Rav Moshe died, but it certainly suggested that he's quoted a number of times in the Igrot Moshe. It certainly quoted that he was, you know, he was on the top table there, as it were, with Rav Moshe Feinstein. So I'm suggesting that he was the senior posek. And he certainly disagrees with Rav Moshe Feinstein. He says as follows, Kavanat Kiddushim Nisuin, Hishay Shatahim Yuchedet Lebal Muvdelet Me'achirim. What is Jewish marriage about? Jewish marriage is about monogamy, that the woman is designated to a monogamous relationship with her husband to the exclusion of anybody else. You don't have to have in mind that, you know, oh, I'm doing this for the mitzvah of getting married, or that it's specifically Kedat Moshev Yisrael. In actual fact, it's, you know, it's you live together as husband and wife. And with civil marriage, that's exactly what people have in mind. And in actual fact, if there was to be a ring to be given, which does happen at civil marriages, you know, the groom gives the bride a ring, and let's say they've got their best friends who happen to be kosher edim witnessing it, then she'd be married. Now it says it's true, usually you don't have the kosher edim. But dino kedim kadesh blo edim or pachot mishvei pruta. In actual fact, we can say it's like, you know, a person accidentally was Makadesh's wife with a ring that was worth less than a pruta. So then if they live together like a married couple, everybody knows about it, then we regard them halachically as being married. And he says, we won't go through the rest of it line by line, but Pela upele mamash tisame sa'arata rosh. He says it's shocking and unbelievable and makes her hair stand on end. The fact that he doesn't mention Rav Moshe specifically, but he says the fact that somebody, he's clearly referring to Rav Moshe, said that if you have reform wedding, that it's not valid. And he disagrees with that, and he says he's written to the person who published that opinion and demanded that he retract. Rav Moshe never retracted because he felt that he was right. But Rav Henkin disagreed very, very strongly and held that it was an issue of Mamzerut. It's said, I've heard it said, that Rav Soloveitchik also felt that what Rav Henkin was saying was correct, and that civil marriage, cohabiting, reform marriage is valid halachically, but he didn't publish an opinion. He didn't want to get involved in that debate when already Rav Moshe and Rav Henkin were involved and were expressing views, and he wanted to let it play out in its own way. I want to finish off by bringing the tshuva of Rav Osher Weiss in the first volume of Minchat Asher, Siman Ayin Bet, who also addresses this this question. And he says there are two reasons why a reform wedding wouldn't be valid. He certainly thinks, like Rav Moshe, that osei adam bilat or bilat zlut, that not everybody's looking for a to be married under in a halachic sense, and I would suggest that one could argue that, you know, nowadays, you know, if a couple has chosen not to get married kedat moshev Yisrael, then it indicates that they don't want to be halachically married. You know, they could have a kosher wedding, and they've opted not to for whatever reason. It means because they don't want, or don't yet want, to be halachically married. Rav Osher Weiss adds two further considerations, which are related to each other. And that is, he says that the very notion of reform marriage or civil marriage is based on a very different understanding to what halachic marriage is. Halachic marriage is, it's the least romantic aspect of marriage. But essentially what happens under the chuppah is ha'isha niknet. The man gives the woman an item of value and she is acquired by him. Now, that doesn't mean that, you know, she belongs to him as a chattel, but it's a halachic kinyan. And that is what is the underlying principle of the mechanics of Jewish marriage. And that's very much, he says, at odds with modern thinking. Modern thinking is that, you know, this is an equal relationship, an egalitarian relationship, where nobody makes a kinyan on anybody else. And that's, and therefore, when a couple enter into an act of a ceremony of marriage, which is so much at odds with the halachic model of marriage, so therefore it can't qualify as halachic marriage. Whatever might be exchanged, whatever might be said, because it's actually the underlying principles are undermining the principles of halachic marriage. That's his first point. Second point is, he says, with civil marriage, at what point are you married? You're married when the registrar proclaims you man and wife. That's, or husband and wife. That's it. And people assume that is what formalises the marriage. It's the, you know, at the end where the celebrant proclaims, I now pronounce you man and wife, husband and wife, whatever the nusach is. Whereas in a halachic sense, what makes a marriage is the man giving the ring to the wife. And as soon as that's happened, they're married. It's not waiting for any other proclamation. I assume that if in a registry office a couple were getting married and they've given the rings, whatever, and then the registrar were to drop down dead, the ceremony would have to be repeated, I'm guessing, because they haven't yet been proclaimed, pronounced husband and wife. Well, he says that's not necessary in a halachic context. So what Rav Osher Weiss is saying is that the definition of a Jewish marriage is one which, you know, is an act of kinyan. And if that's undermined, so then that will be aidut, as it were, that it's not a valid marriage. So to sum up, certainly the practice as I understand it in most Batei Din is to, if possible, to arrange a get for a reform marriage. But if it's not possible, then not to to make a remarriage dependent on that. The reason being because of Rav Moshe's contentions that a couple who are living together, we don't say Ein Adam Oseh Bi'ilat or Bi'ilat Znut. Perhaps a couple are happy to be in a casual, non-formal relationship, even if it was a relationship of civil marriage, but they're not interested in being Jewishly married to each other. And also because if it was a reform marriage, which perhaps shows that they are interested in being Jewishly married to each other, that's undermined by the fact that there aren't kosher witnesses. And Rav Osher Weiss said, even if there were kosher witnesses, it's undermined by the fact that they're not conforming to halachic norms. And that's indicating that they might want to be married, and they might want to have a Jewish marriage, but they don't want to be married Kedat Moshe v'Yisrael, which is what is important there. So there's a certain paradox here, which is, of course, on the one hand, it seems a little bit, intolerant to be so dismissive of reform marriage and to say this isn't Jewish marriage. On the other hand, of course, it's not only very brave, but it's a very helpful position, because if there wasn't this halachic intolerance, then there would be many, many questions of mamzerut. But there is this halachic intolerance, which means that the issues of mamzerut don't arise here. So those were the thoughts that I wanted to share with you this evening. Hopefully we won't encounter too many real life situations like this, but it certainly does happen from time to time. Certainly in the course of my rabbinate, I've encountered this on a number of occasions. And certainly one shouldn't paskin on the basis of what you heard in a 45-minute shiur on a Tuesday night by Zoom when you were eating your dinner. But, these questions should always be brought to a recognised Beit Din or a competent posek. So, Ad Kan, and thank you all for joining me.